It's like stretching before the big run. Start with this, a podcast featuring Night Vale creators Joseph Fink and me, Jeffrey Craner. Each episode, we discuss a topic, then give you two assignments, something to consume and something to create. Start with this. Art is disposable.
Art is hard. Starting is hard. If you wanna start somewhere, you can start with this. You can start with this.
The Italian futurists, in their manifestos, believed art was to be made and then left behind, that we have a new consciousness of time, and that there should be no patience for old ideas in a world that is constantly moving on. They also wanted to glorify war, fight feminism, and burn down museums and libraries, so let's not get too carried away. My takeaway from them has always been that art is disposable. We must allow it to be cast into the trash bin to make room for more art. I'm not talking about the monolith called art. I'm talking about your art. If you're going to continue to make art long into your life, you need to be willing to dispose of it, to move on, to be willing to let your art fail spectacularly. In other words, don't be precious. You need to fuel those muscles with other art. You must exercise those muscles by making art, and you must do it all the time. And in order to get yourself in the right mindset to make art all the time, you must be willing to let it go, dispose of it, and move on to something new. That's why we have assignments on this show. Make stuff constantly. Don't worry if it doesn't work. You can always write more. I'm Jeffrey Craner, here with Joseph Fink. Let's do this. It's interesting, like one of the things that I think a lot of writers get asked and that we've definitely been asked before, which is about like, oh, what did you have to cut from the novel or what did you have to do that? But I think that's the instant thing you think about as a writer is to like the most basic thing you regularly dispose of is like sections of your work or words or things like that. But like how much of what you write, like let's say with a Night Vale or an Alice episode, like how much of it doesn't ever actually make it?
Well, so there's kind of two different things here. Mm-hmm. One is the stuff I'm working on now. And that stuff, I honestly, it's hard for me to say because part of this is not dwelling on that. And so I honestly don't think that much about the stuff I cut.
Yeah.
I cut it because it doesn't work in that piece. And so, I mean, I know for a fact, like we've had entire passages from live shows cut. And I know that because I often put them... And we can talk about this in a moment, but a good way of getting over that is storing them somewhere, but then just never looking in there. Mm-hmm. Because it's always there if you need it, but you'll find that you never actually need it. So we did that with some of the stuff cut from live shows. And there's like entire scenes cut from Night Vale live shows that just never have gone back to because I haven't needed to. Mm-hmm. It just kind of lives there. So it's really hard for me to say how much I've cut. Definitely a good amount. But there's also the thing of entire works that just didn't go anywhere. I have, since high school till now, I would say I have, trying to think here, I think 5 novels that I've written all or a good chunk of that maybe some of them I'll go back to. Definitely the ones that I like started in college, mm-hmm. I won't. Because I've moved on. You know, the one I wrote in college, I finished it. I wrote an entire draft of a novel, and it wasn't very good. And so it's painful, but you're just like, good. I practiced writing a novel, and now I can set that aside and move on to the next thing. And so there's a lot of stuff like that. I have so many short stories and novels that I wrote and moved on from and have never used any part of. I've never used a line from them. I've never used an idea. They were just kind of there for me to work out some stuff and to develop my techniques and then kind of can go into the past.
Makes me think of like the idea of when J.D. Salinger died, he didn't want any of his unpublished work put out into the world. And that absolutely makes sense when you think about the amount of garbage he had to have written. And that's not, I'm not shading J.D. Salinger. It's just to simply say that, like, if you write as much as he did, that means as much good work as he wrote, you're going to have a bunch of garbage work as well. So I could see why you wouldn't want your memory tainted with that.
Yeah, I mean, I do another podcast with John Darnielle of the Mountain Goats, and he will take songs that he knows he's not going to use and just destroy the recordings because he doesn't trust people not to respect that. And he knows that, listen, I decided this wasn't working. and I decided I didn't want it out there, and I need you all to respect my decision. And since I know that it's going to be hard for people to do that, I'm just going to completely destroy this recording. It won't exist anymore.
That's an amazing thing, that idea of somebody like John. John has such a large following, and recordings of songs are so compact as opposed to a novel. So they're easy to consume pretty quickly. So the idea that somebody could, surreptitiously post something like that. Or
I mean, it
steal
happened
that
to him. There was an entire album that he decided to throw away, and then it got leaked. And so there's just this album that he really didn't want anyone to hear because it wasn't working.
Yeah.
And that's part of the artist disposable thing, is recognizing when something's not working and being able to walk away from that.
Yeah. What's interesting is I was thinking about of when we decide to leave something behind or throw it away. And I'm interested in the idea of both trashing something and recycling something, because I think there's two components there. But there's a fine line between leaving something behind because you're spinning your wheels and leaving something behind because you sort of hate it or dislike it, or you just have convinced yourself that it doesn't work. Have you ever, do you have those two separate feelings when dealing with something? I think you and I are both at points as writers where we write something and just kind of have a sense that it's not working, especially for something like Night Vale that has its specific type of voice. We kind of know what works or doesn't on a live show. But say a different project, have you had instances where you reach something and you're like, I have absolutely no confidence in this. Like, I actually hate working on this and I need to get rid of it.
It's so hard when you're working on something to be able to tell whether it's good or not. I'll often talk about, like, especially a really long project. When you're writing a novel or something like that really takes up so much time to make, you reach this point, and when I say you, I mean me. Mm-hmm. I reach this point where I just have lost all ability to tell whether it's good or not. And then you have to fall back a bit on experience. This is why it's probably a good idea to be quicker about disposing things earlier in your development as an artist, because kind of part of developing as an artist is making a lot of stuff and throwing it away and making new stuff. As you get more developed, you can kind of trust a little bit more of the process and be a little bit more like, I'm too close to this to tell whether it's good or not. But I do know on a functional level it's working, and I know that I'm following my artistic process. And so whatever comes out of this will probably be at a certain level of quality. It is one of the hardest things to reach a point where you can trust that.
Yeah. There's another episode of this podcast that we did called From Idea to Execution. And it's really kind of the twin sibling of this idea too, which is, if you're making enough things, one, you get better at making those things, and you'll develop a better sense of what is working for you and what's not. But also it makes you less precious about the things you are making. It's interesting. I think it was you I was talking to a while back about reading books, and I've heard other people say something similar, which is when you're reading novels, you have stacks and stacks of books, that some that you own that you'll never ever get to because you just buy so many books and you want to get through all of them. It's a very freeing feeling the day you decide, I don't have to read the whole book. If I get a little ways in and I'm like, this book isn't grabbing me, I spent for years just stagnating for months on a book because it just wasn't grabbing my attention, but I just felt too bad about not reading a whole book. Like, I got to read the whole book. And you're like, no. The day you realize you don't have to do that is the day you start reading a lot of really great things, because you allow yourself to move on. And the same, I think, works as a creator too, is that when you stagnate on something, you're not actually creating anything. You find yourself, you convince yourself that writer's block exists. And there's probably a lot of other factors at work there. You just may have developed some lack of confidence for what this is, or you may have developed a distaste for the idea, or like with exercise, just some days your body doesn't feel like jogging, your body wants to stretch. So some days your mind works the same way, it wants to do something else.
Yeah, I think one thing to think about is that you don't always need a good reason to abandon something. Similar with, like, as you say, reading a book, sometimes a book's just not clicking with you, and it's not that it's a bad book. I can think of many books I've read that are beloved and won big awards, and were like the books that everyone was talking about, and I read them, and I'm just like, this just doesn't work for me. It's not the book's fault. It's maybe just the wrong time in my life to encounter this work. And it's the same thing with a project. I've had a number of projects that maybe I think probably could have worked, that could have been salvageable, that I think the bones were there. But if you reach a point where you're like, I don't know, this project doesn't interest me anymore, that's a totally valid reason to walk away from it. To be like, I'm not interested in this project anymore. So even though there's some good stuff in there, I'm just going to move on to something else.
Yeah.
And that is not only okay, that is good. That is a good thing to move forward to stuff that interests you.
Yeah. Yeah, and this gets to the next thing about the disposability of art. And I'm going to speak a little bit about consuming art rather than creating it, but this directly affects your creation as well, which is being willing to let go, I think, of certain comfort arts, right? We have comfort foods. We have the foods that this is the food I love. No matter what, I will always love chicken fried steak. I grew up in Texas, and chicken fried steak with cream gravy is just a thing. It's terrible for you, but it just is what it is. And I have my opinions on how well it's made when I go eat it at places. And it's a thing I will always go back to. And if I see it on a menu, I will get it. But I think that sometimes we limit ourselves in our diets by the comfort foods there and without expanding out to say, like, I want to try this. You know what would be good is to mix in a salad once in a while. Or you know what it's cool is some type of a grain, you know, something that is light. And you start realizing that different foods have different effects on your body. Maybe not as dramatically as they do in, like, video games. But but in some ways, if you really sit there and listen to what your body needs, that you start finding different magical effects that these different foods do have on you. And I think the same way goes in art, too. I think it's a really great idea to diversify what you're taking in. We have certain genres or writers or approaches to writing that we tend toward. And I think breaking yourself out of that is really important. As people who grew up listening to pop music, you were told over and over about how amazing the Beatles are. And we program that in as just a staple of, like, Western pop music. Same thing with Shakespeare and theater. And it's, I think, really important to break yourself out of that and find people doing exciting, different, new things. Being willing to let go for a while. You've had the comment before of, like, could we do just one whole year where nobody does a Shakespeare play?
That's actually a firm belief of mine, that that there should be a year where no theaters produce Shakespeare plays and instead produce new work by local playwrights. And I think that would be good for theater, and I think that would be good for the country. And I don't think that because I think Shakespeare is bad.
Right.
It's because there's only so much we can get out of going back to the same art over and over again, no matter how good that art is. The best art in the world will only give you so much if you keep going back and back to it. And the only way you can get any sort of new, I don't know, discover something new about the world or about yourself is if you're willing to try new art that maybe you don't think is as good, but that's okay because it's showing you something new. And maybe you will discover in moving forward some new art that you loved that you would never occur to you to look at. Thinking of art as disposable is also really good in terms of encouraging you to try making art you wouldn't have otherwise. Mm-hmm. If everything you make kind of has to stand this test of time, that really limits you to stuff that you're already good at, right? But if art's disposable, then you can write a sonnet, or you can try doing a thriller, or you can try doing, like, a body horror story and stuff that maybe you don't think you'd be very good at. And it's okay, because if it's bad, art's disposable and you can just throw it away. It's really freeing to make art disposable.
Yeah, to be able to move on to something else at any given time. And it really sort of, I think, expands your horizons as a consumer and as a creator both to try those different things. Let me ask this. Do you recycle much of what you do? Like, when you leave something behind, there's the whole thing about one way of editing is, like, put it away for a week or a month and then come back to it later and you'll have fresh eyes on it. I don't find that always works, but it certainly is a little bit more helpful than trying to edit something an hour after you finished it.
I think it gets back to what I was saying about novels, where you get so close to something that you just lose all ability to tell whether it's good or bad. Mm-hmm. And certainly what that time thing does is it kind of gives you back that ability.
Yeah.
If you take a month, you can suddenly be like, this part's good, this part's bad. I was not able to see it when I was too close to it. Recycling, though, depends. You know, some work I'm willing to just kind of leave, and there's a lot of work from my past that I'm willing to just consider practice, and I've never really gone through looking, and maybe I wrote a clever line or two, but it just doesn't really matter. I'd rather be creating new stuff rather than pouring through this old practice stuff looking for one or two lines that are worth salvaging. But other times, you know, a really good example is you and I wrote a play together called What the Time Traveler Will Tell Us that I don't think we're ever going to perform again, But I think there was some very good stuff in that. And so with that distance, I think we've both taken stuff from that play, and a good amount of that play has ended up in Welcome to Night Vale, because there were some good lines in there and some good kind of set pieces, and it made sense to use that stuff. It's an entirely context dependent. I would say this. If you think there's going to be enough worthwhile in there that it is worth taking that time away from creating new stuff, then sure. But mostly that's not the case. Mostly the time you would have taken looking for something to recycle would be better spent just creating something new.
Yeah. I do a lot of my looking for recycling material of my old work, because I'll have little folders on my computer that's old plays that I wrote for the Neo Futurists, and yeah, just scraps of rough material of stuff that maybe like we cut a bit out of the community calendar for a live show for word count. And so sometimes that's a pretty simple thing. So I'm like, oh, I can reincorporate this into a later episode probably. But poems and just weird like little sketches of ideas. But I totally agree. Like if the time you spent scouring through your old work, trying to find something to fit the work you're currently doing, is probably time better spent actually just spent on the work you're currently doing to try and keep that momentum going. The way I usually approach recycling is when I sit down before I even start on whatever it is I'm doing, before I start reading, editing, writing more to it, outlining, I'll just go and scour the recycling stuff first, because it actually might cue me to start something brand new. And so there's definitely moments where I've gone through old Neo Futurist plays or like poems that I've started and not really taken off anywhere. And then rather than work on editing the Within the Wires episode that I'm, you know, that I was about to work on, I'll be like, oh my God, this poem is really good except for this one part. I forgot how good this was. Like, you know what? I'm just going to work on this again. And that feels kind of good to be able to do that. And sometimes I'll read a passage of a thing that is okay, and I realize like, oh, I have to remember this is here. And then later when I'm working on a traffic report for Nightvale or something, like, oh, here's this cool passage I wrote a long time ago that I didn't do anything with, and I just saw it the other day, so I can use it again. But I think it's a very good point about not wasting your time scouring through old material to pull from. And a lot of times the stuff that really resonated with you, you still have in your head and you know where it is.
This goes back a bit to what we were talking about in the From Idea to Execution episode. You can try an idea as many times as you want. Something that you disposed of because it wasn't working, and so you were just like, I'm going to leave this behind. I think it's super valid to go back and be like, I think there's a good idea here, and I'm just going to try it again. That's not being precious about the work. That's just understanding that you kind of have infinite amount of tries. You don't have infinite amount of tries. You're going to die eventually. But you have a lot of tries on the same idea. So you can keep going back to, I think this is a good idea for a poem. I don't think this version worked, but I can start over and just try again with this same idea. Using old work to jump off onto new ideas is a really valid way of moving forward without holding on too much to that old work.
Yeah. I wanted to go into like a bigger picture issue here, like more of like a cultural discussion, but I think this fully relates to that. I think every generation deals with this, which is they look back on the pop culture they grew up with. And we have a term that popped up in the last 10, 15 years of problematic or whatever, your fave is problematic. But, you know, you look back and we ask the question of like, oh, I remember that movie being great. Do you think it'd hold up if I watched it again? And usually the answer is no. And that's for a variety of reasons. Sometimes it's like the humor that was really funny in 1978 is not at all funny in 2018, or, you know, it's offensive or something along those lines. But I think the other element too is that as cultures change, the shorthand, the way we joke changes constantly too. And it's really interesting. Been rewatching a bunch of Vine compilations lately. You know, Vine died last year, but there's all these YouTube hour-long compilations of amazing Vines. One thing that's amazing about it is that there are a ton of terrific 7-second Vine videos, and there are a ton of garbage ones that make these like best of clips. I'm like, why is this even on here? But what's interesting is just in 1 year's time, how dated some of the Vines are. It's pretty amazing, not only from like referencing the 2016 election and Hillary Clinton comments, to just simply having, you know, I think a pattern that we've started to, the foundation of our sense of humor as a culture is always changing. And I think what's interesting about that, about artist disposable, is being willing to let go of these bigger ideas of what we grew up with and our memories. And 20 years from now, those Vine compilations will likely still be there, and they'll feel amazingly dated, even though right now they feel to me as a 43-year-old pretty fresh and exciting. It always comes and goes in that, and we're always going to have to be willing to know that when we go back and rewatch an old film that we grew up with, that there's really useful stuff in almost everything. But some of it you have to let go of nostalgia entirely, which is a hard thing to say as we're rebooting our like 50th 90s sitcom on Netflix.
Yeah, and it gets beyond even on a cultural level, just on a personal level, you know, like I was saying with books, this idea that, you know, some really great books just didn't work for me. And probably a lot of that is just it didn't meet me at the right point in my life. And it's, you know, when people are like, do you think this book would hold up? Do you think this movie would hold up? Part of that is, do you think it would turn out that it's wildly offensive and I didn't notice? But a lot of it is, there is a valid fear that when you go back to something, you know, you're at a different point in your life and likely it will not strike you as much. It might be a very good movie or book, but you're just not the same person. And I think we've all had these experiences of books that meant so much to us. And we go back and reread them and we realize this is a perfectly good book, but it no longer feels as important to me because I'm just not in the same point in my life. And it's that same way with your own work, you know, work that feels important when you're making it. If it no longer, this goes back to valid reasons to get rid of art. You know, if you just, you have reached a different point in your life and this art you're making no longer feels important to you, it is perfectly valid to be like, this was good art. I'm glad I made this art, but it's no longer art that means anything to me. And I'm just going to move on to something that does.
Yeah, I think the same filter we may want to put on, like, so for my generation of growing up watching movies like Airplane and Labyrinth and all the way into college with Pulp Fiction and things like that, you go back and rewatch these movies and there's a lot of issues and problems and things, and some of it is they're wildly offensive and some of it is just that the pacing or the jokes or the style is completely off. And I think that's the same type of sort of analysis you can put to your own work. There's a lot of early neo-futurist stuff that when I've gone back and reread, I'm like, oh, some of this actually is kind of offensive and I wouldn't do that anymore. And some of it is just like, oh, that's just not where my head's at all. I would never put this out into the world at this point because I personally can't even relate to what I was writing when I was 34 years old or 32 years old. So I think it's important to have those same filters. The question is like, and this is a hard one to answer succinctly, but like, what's the difference between like looking at your own work and saying, this is ready to be done with, or this is no good, and saying those exact same words out of self-loathing, right? Like, is this a struggle? I don't know if you struggle with this or not, but like the idea of like, oh, this is no good because I'm no good.
Yeah, it's tough to look back at old work that doesn't fit you anymore. Mm-hmm. I think often the impulse, right, is to judge yourself. You know, if I went back right now and tried to read the novel that I wrote in college, I probably wouldn't feel great. Mm-hmm. I'd probably be like, wow, okay. Because, you know, at the time, I'm like, I'm a great writer. I'm writing this novel. This is going to be the one. Uh-huh. And I'm sure it's garbage. But I think a couple things there is, one is recognize that you're always developing as an artist, that if something in your past wasn't as good as you do now, that means the process is working. That means you are constantly improving. And so the fact that the thing you wrote 10 years ago isn't as good as you're doing now is great news. Mm-hmm. That's really good news. I think the other thing is again, recognizing that a lot of it has nothing to do with quality. Going back to this meeting something at the right point in your life, a work of art can be perfect for you at that time and then not work at all 10 years later. And it's not because it is intrinsically bad. And it's not because you were bad at it at the time you made it. It's just you're a very different person now and this no longer speaks to you, or it just no longer sparks anything for you, whether it's your own art or someone else's art. And I do think that is part of the maturity in art. That is, I think everyone's, I'm not trying to speak from like a higher place here. I think everyone struggles with this, which is reaching the maturity to be able to understand the difference between this doesn't work for me and this is bad. And mm-hmm. That's with other people's art and with your own art. And it's important to tell that difference because maybe something is bad. Maybe something is bad because it treats the world badly or it treats people badly, and then it's bad. But a lot of times when you say this is bad, what you really mean is this doesn't work for me. Yeah. And that can happen for a lot of reasons. It might be badly made, but it also just probably doesn't fit who you are. And so I don't know if that 100% addressed what you were saying, but I do think having that in your head when you look back at your old work, that to try and differentiate between this is bad and this was me 10 years ago and I wouldn't do this anymore.
I think that's a really important distinction because, yeah, the idea of the only bad art is the art that does actual harm to people. And being able to recognize that as you move forward, I think is really, really vitally important. Just making an attempt at art, if it doesn't work for you or the people who are consuming it, that doesn't make it bad. It just makes it maybe not executed as well as it could be, something to that effect. Let's take a break, and then we'll come back with our assignments.
Hello, Joseph here. I have two books coming out this year. Seriously, May 11th, 2021. The first 10 years, two sides of the same love story. So there is a love story that happened behind the scenes of Welcome to Night Vale between me and Meg Bashwinner, MC and tour manager for the live Night Vale show. In this memoir, we recount the first 10 years of our relationship, year by year, without consulting each other beforehand. It's a funny and romantic story about how differently we experience and remember our lives. Then on July 20th, 2021, The Halloween Moon, my first ever novel for ages 10 and up. Esther Gold loves Halloween, until the year that Halloween night just won't end. Even she doesn't want Halloween to last forever. No matter your age, if you are a fan of what I do, I think you're going to love this book. Get these books wherever you get your books.
Now it's time for your assignments. I'm going to start with your assignment to consume. Here's something I really want to recommend to you. It is the Indie Feed Performance Poetry Podcast. Now, this podcast is no longer in production, but there are over 1,000 episodes featuring hundreds of different poets. I listened to this way back in, I want to say I started listening to this back in like 2010. And I plowed through several hundred episodes just back to back to back on this road trip from Brooklyn to Jackson, Mississippi. And sort of, I think by osmosis, by the end of that trip, I think my entire approach to writing had changed. You hear so much poetry and you start hearing rhythms and assonance and so many really amazing techniques in writing. And you hear it from a diverse swath of voices. You hear people that are definitely part of this like downtown New York, New Eurekan Poets Cafe type of vibe, all the way up to cowboy poetry and people who are musicians and put kind of like beats to, it's borderline hip hop and to some extent. And I think when you hear the diversity of different types of poetry, especially this show, which every episode is mostly under 10 minutes. And a good chunk of it is just the intro and the outro. But the poems themselves tend to be about 5 to 6 minutes long. And it's amazing. And I think you will find new work that you haven't ever thought of before by voices that you've never thought of before. And you'll find a bunch of work that you're like, I absolutely don't like this. But there's such a wide array of people to hear. So I think you'll get a lot of inspiration. So all episodes are short. What I'm going to tell you is, I'll leave the link in the show notes, but you can go to the Performance Poetry Podcast webpage in the show notes, or it should still be up on iTunes. Pick out 20 episodes to listen to. Make it diverse. I'll give you some poets I recommend, but I'm not going to tell you which episodes to listen to. I want you to have your own kind of random assortment. Here's some poets I would recommend to you. Sarah Kay, Anis Mojgani, Carlos Andres Gomez, Rachel Kahn, and Lynn Prokope. So go check out Indie Feed Performance Poetry Podcast. I hope you listen to more than 20, but start with 20 and make it from all different poets.
And how does this relate for you to the idea of art being disposable?
Well, I didn't want to recommend anything to anybody that was like, I want you to think of this art that should be that should go into the garbage. I wanted to keep it positive. I think for me is when you listen to hundreds and hundreds of these episodes over the course of several days, I think what I came away with feeling was is that rather than focusing on when you read an 800-page novel and you get to the end and you don't like it very much, it's kind of a bummer. It's sort of a letdown, and you might actually sort of resent that a little bit. But with this, I found that what's really wonderful is I don't have to resent art I don't like. I can just simply find the good in it. And part of the good in art I don't like is I get a better sense of why I don't like it. And sometimes that turns into reasons why I do like it later. You know, it just puts it in my head. And so I think part of our discussion earlier in the show was about art is disposable, meaning that there's so much of it, you can be willing to let it all go. And some of that means letting go good and bad, both. So I think allowing 20 different poets to wash over you in short increments, I think will kind of teach you the value of the wide swath of ways people approach structuring language.
For your create assignment, I'm going to give you a series of instructions. You're going to want to be like, can I do this or this? I would like you to just follow these instructions exactly. I think following these will lead you somewhere interesting, even if some of it may not feel great while you're doing it. I want you to write a story about a wedding reception. I want you to make that story 2 minutes. That's about 200 to 250 words when you read it out loud. Finish it, refine it a bit, work on it, get it to somewhere that you are happy with it. I want you to delete it, completely throw it away, get rid of it, leave no copies for yourself. And there may be good stuff in there that you're like, oh, I wish I could use that later. If those ideas are good, they'll probably come back to you later. You're going to throw that story away completely and let it go. And then you're going to write a story about a bird. This story can be fiction, it can be nonfiction, it can be first, second, or third person. It will be 2 minutes long, and this one you are going to record and share. I'm excited to hear some bird stories.
That's all for this episode, but your assignment is just beginning. Head on over to startwiththispodcast.com to join our membership community. Becoming a member allows you to share your assignments with other listeners, talk about what's sparking your creativity, and find future collaborators, hopefully. Plus, you'll be able to ask follow-up questions about this and future episodes and gain exclusive access to episodes where we answer those questions. Membership is only $5. That's about 100 live crickets, but hopefully $5 is easier to find in your couch than 100 crickets. Either way, that's all it takes to be part of our membership forum. We can't wait to see what you're working on. Start With This is a production of Night Vale Presents. It's produced by Julia Melfi, editing by Grant Stewart, mixing by Vincent Cascione, theme by Joseph Fink. All other music is by Caged Animals. Find more at cagedanimals.net. Very special thanks to Adam Cecil and Christy Gressman. Check out nightvalepresents.com for more information about this show and all of our other shows. Thank you for listening.
Okay, so Jeffrey, I think that's about it. And I would just like to leave everyone with this bit of inspiration from the two of us.
Mm-hmm.
Like they always say, if at first you don't succeed, then
eat
that's the way it was for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's it.
Thanks, y'all. Hey, y'all, it's Jeffrey Craner. So I do another fiction podcast called Within the Wires, which are stories told through the guise of found audio. Each season is a separate tale. You want a prison escape told through relaxation tapes? That's season one. Want a love story that unfurls through voice messages only? Season five. How about the revelations of an unexplained death told through a series of museum audio guides? Season two. There are 7 seasons of Within the Wires for you to binge right now, each only 10 episodes long. So go get Within the Wires wherever you get your podcasts.
From PRX.